near-death experiences, it's amazing to see how the sensory function can actually be greatly accelerated. They, you know, we talked about the rapid accelerated thinking process that can go on during near-death experiences. But I think this is a chapter where I brought up, to me, one of the more fascinating lines of evidence as well. I find it incredible that people that are blind, especially those blind from birth, can have these remarkably visual, detailed experiences. I have a number of them. We have a small series of people that are legally blind that describe their experiences with my website. And their vision that they describe is absolutely typical of all other near-death experiences. They actually are able to see, and to them, this is often, for all of them, it's the first time in their life that they've been able to see. In fact, they don't even know what vision is until these blind people have this experience. I've interviewed one of these individuals blind from birth. Her name was Vicky. And you cannot, George, explain vision to somebody who's blind from birth based on the remaining four senses.
You can't.
It's impossible.
Or even color. You know?
That color is an abstraction that they can't even relate to. And yet when they have these experiences for the first time in their life, they understand by their own personal experience what vision really is. And not only that, but a lot of other near-death experiencers describe vision that is, if you will, supernormal. Now, we're limited anatomically in our vision because our eyes are in the eye sockets in the skull, so we see a pie-shaped visual field. Large numbers of near-death experiencers describe that their vision during their near-death experience is actually 360 degrees. Instead of seeing just a limited pie-shaped visual field, they see in front of them, behind them, above them, below them, truly a spherical range of vision. And that, of course, is medically inexplicable.
Next one, consciousness during anesthesia.
Again, absolutely amazing that people that have anesthesia, they're asleep. In fact, they're profoundly asleep. When they're under general anesthesia, very often they're being artificially ventilated or breathing because they're so deep under anesthesia, they can't breathe spontaneously. Unfortunately, during anesthesia procedure, surgery, very, very uncommonly, but it does happen, but there can be a cardiac arrest.
Oh, it's one of the most dangerous parts, as you know, Jeffrey, during an operation.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, some of these near-death experiencers were actually close to death before their emergency surgery for a variety of reasons, but for a variety of circumstances, they code. Their heart stops even while they're under that deep blanket of anesthesia. Now, when your heart stops, within 10 to 20 seconds, your electroencephalogram measurements of brain activity, that's a measurement of brain activity, go absolutely flat. So even if you're not under general anesthesia, after a cardiac arrest, after your heart stops, you can't have a conscious experience. There's no chance. But to have that while under general anesthesia makes it, if you will, doubly impossible to have a conscious experience. And yet, I was able to study a series of 23 near-death experiences that were convincingly under general anesthesia, and looking at 33 near-death experience elements in that group, comparing it to all other near-death experiences, they were absolutely the same, with the exception that those under anesthesia had a statistically higher frequency of tunnel experiences. But other than that, absolutely typical, essentially identical near-death experiences, even with the brain profoundly influenced with general anesthesia. Some of the strongest evidence, from my way of looking at it, that near-death experiences are absolutely occurring separate from any possible physical brain functioning.
And you know, during our call portion, Jeffrey, you're urging caution in airing anyone who has nearly died as a result of ingesting illegal substances or something in the intensive care ICU. Tell me why.
Yeah, I'm especially focused on illegal substances for ethical considerations. I really don't want anyone to come on and talk about a drug experience and claim that it was a near-death experience. Certainly, people that ingest illegal substances occasionally do actually code. Their heart stops, their breathing stops, and they can have near-death experiences.
Sure.
But, you know, if that doesn't happen, then they can simply have a hallucinatory, unreal experience as a consequence of illegal drug ingestion. So that's what that cautionary word was for.
Okay, the next line here is perfect playback.
Now, isn't that a good way to put it, George? A perfect playback is what happens during the life review. We've talked about that a little bit. At the time of a near-death experience, about 20% of people may see parts of their prior life, or it may be what we call a panoramic life review. They may see all of their entire life experiences. And in fact, Some of the more detailed panoramic life reviews involve not only a review of what happened in their prior life, but amazingly, they can actually see and sense what other people felt like that they were interacting with. And that's a real eye-opener for a lot of these near-death experiencers. They can feel the pain, the hurt that they caused other people, or they may feel the love and compassion of other people that they helped during their prior life. Now, that is one of the most transformative aspects of near-death experience that happened. I studied, again, that population of 613 near-death experience looking for every single life review I could find. My goal in this study was to say, is there any reason for either the near-death experiencer or me personally to believe that there was any unrealistic content in the life review? And out of all the life reviews that I studied as this part of the research, I didn't find a single unrealistic life review. In other words, the best of my ability to look over huge numbers of life review, they were absolutely realistic, containing actually occurring prior life events, even if the near-death experiencer had forgotten them.
What does that tell you, that when someone has an NDE, they go through this life review? To me, that smacks of some kind of divine intervention.
Oh, I think there's no question about that, especially when they become aware of what another person felt like that they were interacting with, often to their considerable surprise. And we've even had near-death experiencers go back later and ask people and say, gosh, did this really happen? Did you feel that way at this time? And 100% of the time, it's validated as being absolutely correct. They had no way at all of knowing that that was going on when they lived their life. They only, with their eyes increasingly open during their near-death experience, did that awareness come. It certainly suggests that we have a true collective consciousness to be aware in a very real way of what other people were thinking or feeling that they interacted with throughout their entire prior life. No doubt that there seems to be a higher consciousness, a unifying consciousness that we're all a part of. I think that's some of the strongest evidence right there.
And you may have proven here, beyond just life after death, that in what is there with these near-death experiences, you may have proven that there is indeed this divine creator.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right, George, and you know, I'm very aware of that. No doubt about that. Many of these other lines of evidence all point consistently to what near-death experiencers almost uniformly believe, and that is that there is an overwhelmingly lovingly, compassionate, and infinitely knowledgeable God that we're all a part of and who loves us unconditionally, and that we're all a part of a much greater scheme and much greater plan, a much greater universe than we could possibly understand from our earthly experience. I think there's no doubt about that.